Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Julianne Margulies goes from playing the good wife to entering the hot zone May 27th on National Geographic. The three-night miniseries deals with the origins of the Ebola epidemic. Executive producer Lynn Oakes joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. New Ventures highlight the remainder of today's episode. Tetra TV wants to boost the adventuring, or I should say the advertising incomes, of services playing through smart TV sets and TV-connected devices. Chief Executive Steve Shannon details how next half hour. And then we have the duo behind Lady Liberty, one of the five TV pilots showcased Monday night at the Tribeca Film Festival here in New York. Our pair is creative star Julia Linden and director Taylor Nagel. Also ahead, new leader and mandate for National Lampoon and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Ogle.com, proud incumbent partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy Saturday Day to you and all, or Tracy in Iowa, as they like to say in Espanol. And welcome once again to the program All About Television, our first one of the month. 90-day edition free, some great guests coming your way from all over the place, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So pick up your phone, raise your voice, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is there anyway, or catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And if you're shy about using the phone, no problem with us. We got a chat room going. Simon Apple 04 by name. 2 people already in the room. And you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone on the room either way. We will get you involved and interactive with us. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions and other people can be live with you. Linda Holtz is live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. National Lampoon wants to get back in the TV universe and has hired former NBC Universal and IFC executive Evan Shapiro for that objective. Shapiro, who also was Pitt's president early on in that former cable network's life, will be Lampoon's president. Currently under development, an anthology series based on Lampoon's 4,000 short story library and several projects involving comedian and actor Margaret Cho and her Animal Family production company. At this hour, there are 2 unconfirmed reports. One is that Fox, when it has the Super Bowl next year, will cut back on commercial advertising from 5 commercial breaks per quarter to 4. The other unconfirmed story, that Disney's regional sports networks have been sold for $10 billion to Sinclair, the largest TV station in the country, possibly with either Amazon and or entertainment entrepreneur Brian Allen as Sinclair's partner. Again, both stories unconfirmed at this hour. Now before we get to our first guest, some quickies, a trio of current E! Series will continue for another season. Barry Cagliari, Revenge Body with Khloe Kardashian, and Dating, hashtag, no filter. And Bounce TV will debut Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Monday night. Each episode will feature sketches from Hart's digital service, also available on YouTube. 10 episodes will run through midsummer. And that is news notes for today. The film and TV track record of our first guest is quite formidable. Check out these famous film classics: The Fisher King, Sleepless in Seattle, Bad Girls, Contact, Interstellar, and a thing that she started her career on called Flashdance. And when it comes to television, 2 TV land classics in terms of situation comedies, Hot in Cleveland and The Soul Man with Serge the Entertainer. Not to mention the drama Helix, which we featured on this program 5 years ago, from at that point someone who had never done television before. That ran on Sci-Fi for 2 years. And then there was Good Girls for Both, the Amazon series a lot of people think should have gotten a second season. Her latest TV project premieres May 27th on National Geographic. It's the 3-night miniseries, The Hot Zone, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner for The Good Wife, Julianne Margulies. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an interview exclusive, executive producer Linda Oakes. Linda, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
How long has The Hot Zone been in development for, and what had you been involved with it?
Well, I'm almost embarrassed to say 28 years. It's been the longest gestating, most frustrating experience of my career.
What made it that
but
way?
But ultimately, less frustrating because the result was so wonderful.
And I know it was at the Tribeca Film Festival earlier this week. The critics are already lining up with some great reviews for it. What made the process so frustrating? What finally got it over the hump?
Well, basically, when television became the most interesting medium and the golden age was born, I suddenly realized that I could make this story on television better than I could make it as a movie, because I didn't have to end it in three acts, because we could get the science right, because National Geographic had emerged as a network that wanted serious and exciting material that was able to market it and get it to its audience. So the world changed in a way that I was fortunately able to recognize, and I realized I can tell this story better in television than in movies, which I'd been trying to do for decades.
Why did this epidemic become the plague around the world that it did? And where do we stand now? What do you hope that people will get from seeing how this situation has been recreated for television?
Well, Ebola is the monster that it is, and the terrifying monster that it is, because of its mortality rate and its insidious ways of both reinventing itself and preying on our kindest impulses when we take care of each other to infect us. So that's a very insidious monster, one in which kills almost everyone, races through the body, races through the community in a high form of contagion, and then can disappear into the forest only to reemerge in a new form.
By the way, we have four people in our chat room already, so if you'd like, get in the room, give us some thoughts, give us some questions, or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Talk about
And of course, in Richard Preston's book, he was able to illustrate the horrors of Ebola, what it does to the human body, the way the blood pustules form all over the body, and the organs are destroyed from the inside out. So it became kind of a science horror story with the most wonderful lead, a woman.
And talk about that woman and how Julianne Moore has got into her role, got into her skin, if you will.
Well, first of all, Juliana is one of the most divine actresses I've ever worked with. She's such a professional. She's so on top of everything, and she's so smart. She has no problem with the scientific dialogue, saying things like fluorescence, filovirus, in the middle of a sentence and making it exciting. But what she did is, of course, she reached out to Nancy Jacks, the character, the heroine that she was playing, and talked to her about the time, what it was like to be a woman colonel on an army base in charge of this epidemic when no one believed her, what the sexism was like at the time, how she approached her job and her marriage, because her husband, as you can see in the series, is so desperately worried about her, as appropriately worried about her. And so in speaking to Nancy, she was able to get so many nuances of her character and absorb them and made them her own.
And I understand that both the Jackses didn't have a chance to visit the set, didn't have a chance to consult on the film. How involved were they to make sure that this miniseries was as accurate as possible to what they lived through?
Well, we had the Jackses, we had Peter Jarling, we had the Jackses' nephew, who's a virus expert himself working in this field. We had Nat Geo's science team, which is formidable. So we had a lot of consultants making sure that we could get everything as right as you can possibly achieve on television. That matters to Nat Geo. It matters to me. I do a lot of science movies, and it's an opportunity to get it right where most people don't care. So the Jackses were very involved. Their nephew was on the set day to day, making sure we were doing the procedures correctly. And Nat Geo was checking the script.
You're hearing Linda O. She's an award-winning executive producer, and her latest work for television is The Hot Zone. It's a 3-9 miniseries starring Julianne Margulies, and it premieres Monday night, May 27th, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on the National Geographic Service. We have on cable and satellite all over the place. Linda joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Tom Abbo will be live from New York. Delighted you're with us on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker on this Friday afternoon, 3rd of May, 2019. If you have a question or comment for Linda, don't be shy. Ring in 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Diamond Apple 04 by name. On Monday, we will mark 10 years of this program being on Blog Talk Radio, so be sure to join us in the celebration. That's Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And when we come today on the program, among our guests, we'll have the person running a very interesting service available on smart TV sets and devices. It's called Dust. His name is Eric Blomberg. And you'll also meet the people behind a short subject that played earlier this time at the Tribeca Film Festival. Their names are David and Keith Lynch. The name of the short which ran on Dust is called Zero. Could it become a series on that service? We'll find out next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Linda, where did you produce this film? Where was it shot around the country?
It was shot in Toronto. The lab sequences were shot in Toronto. And then we had the most wonderful experience in South Africa shooting the origin sequences.
What was it like?
I loved South Africa. I could have just stayed there. The place, the culture is so rich. The history is in the land. You can't get CNN, so it was a sort of wonderful escape from politics and America for me. And I just read all about Zulu history and bonded with all of our local cast. And it was a rainbow crew. It was a rainbow set, and it was one of the most joyous sets I've ever been on. I think the South Africans felt we were really respecting and really appreciating their culture.
You've got something very special coming up in a few weeks here in New York, where you're going to get a special award for what you've been doing in terms of programming and films that you say deal with science and environment. Tell us about that award and how what this group is doing, by the way.
Well, I call it And Still She Persisted Award because it took me so long to get this mounted right. So I'm completely thrilled, flattered, and honored that Earth Alliance has given me this award. I think that we have the same values, it's quite clear, which is that only through really understanding what is going on in the Earth, that we share the same planet, it has the same fate, and our nationalities don't separate us. We are all one in terms of the viruses that we face, in terms of the moral and existential crises we face. The more we understand that we have mutual and collective responsibility for the planet, and the more we understand each other's cultures so that the Earth can become more of a community, the better the effort to combat viruses will be, the better the effort to combat racism and sexism and the various blight hunger that we see spottily and unfairly distributed throughout the globe.
And by the way, at the end of our interview, we'll tell you how you can find out more about this group and about the special event here in New York that Linda will be part of. Before we get into some general things about your thoughts on where TV's at, I wanted to ask about Helix. We had the creator of the show on our program, and it was very interesting that you decided to really take on somebody who had never done television before. He was somebody who was involved with the World Bank at one point in his career and said, I want to do TV, come in from the Middle East, do it. And he gets his first series on the air, and he runs 2 years on sci-fi. What was it like doing Helix and working with the cast and crew there?
Working where?
With Helix, the sci-fi series.
Oh, on Helix. Well, we made Helix in Montreal, and it was a challenging shoot because, of course, the compound was supposed to be in the Arctic. So that was a very interesting process to basically create. There was a debate about whether we should do it through special effects or we should do it by shooting the snow way out there in Canada. But it was a very interesting project, and of course it had a sort of distant relationship to the hot zone for me because it was about an immortality virus, so that you could see that my obsession with mutating viruses attracted me to Helix in the first place.
And at the time we had Helix feature on this program, one of the things we talked about was the fact that the idea of the show was when you were shooting it up in Canada, you wanted everyone wanted the cast to be to have this claustrophobic feeling.
Right.
Of something happening. So that, that set itself was very very closed.
Very claustrophobic.
And it
did
contribute to the actual mood of the show.
Yes. We wanted people to feel confined and quarantined. And we wanted to create for the audience the terror of isolation. And if the actors truly felt it, then the audience would be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Hot Zone, talk about the other members of the cast, and also talk about the people who actually wrote the script.
In the Hot Zone?
Yeah.
Brian and Kelly. Peterson and Kelly Souders were the writers who conquered this monster and created the wonderful marriage story and origin story that wove it all together. They're among my favorite, perhaps my favorite showrunners I ever worked with. They're incredibly smart. They can write scary, scary scenes, and they can write really emotional scenes, and that's always what you look for in a writer. They also are my partners as producers.
I didn't have a chance, unfortunately, to meet them at Tribeca on the red carpet a couple of days ago. But I understand they have a great background in terms of script writing, and a lot of people think that they've got they have a super career in TV ahead of them if they want it.
They are spectacular. I have nothing but the absolute greatest things to say about Kelly Souders and Brian Peterson. They are champions and pros.
Now, how about the rest of the cast? And what kind of research did they do in terms of getting ready for their roles?
Well, I know that Noah Emmerich, who plays Jerry Jacks, Nancy's husband, spoke to Jerry Jacks before he took on the role. And Noah is a very deep and wise person. I just adore him. He was asked the other night, I don't know if you heard the Q&A, but he was asked the other night if he felt like he was being sexist when he protected his wife from doing her job, and how did he not feel paternalistic towards her. And he answered that he just saw it as she was doing her job, and because she was doing her job and he respected what she did, he never questioned any of it until, obviously, it was life-threatening. And then he just wanted to make sure she was safe. It was clearly something he thought deeply about, both in terms of his own relationships and how supportive a husband Jerry Jacks was throughout this, despite how difficult it was for him.
The Hot Zone is National Geographic's latest dramatic miniseries starring Julianna Margulies and Noah Emmerich, and it premieres on Monday, May 27th, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on National Geographic. We've got the executive producer of the award winner, Linda Oakes, with us. Great track record of film and TV. And we'll get her thoughts in a moment about what she thinks about today's current TV landscape. And if you have a question or comment for her, make the phone ring, 646-652-296. We'd love to hear you. Be interactive with us. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later in this hour, our Clapping Trivia Question of the Week. We have two prizes in play, including the new Gentleman Jack book based on HBO's acclaimed new miniseries. So if you wanted to win it, be part of our Clapping Trivia Question segment. That's coming up later this hour. Linda, with what is all going on right now in television, how do you size up this landscape, especially in terms of opportunities for women and women of color?
I think it's the best it's ever been. Now, you need to know that I'm a Pollyanna, and it's been a posture that's protected me through eras that are much, much tougher on women. I always believe that if you take yourself seriously, other people will take you seriously, and if you believe in your material, you can find a buyer. And, of course, there are women buyers out there, too, plenty of them. But in terms of the toughest issue for women, which has been directing, over the past 2 years, it has become compulsory for women directors to be considered on both movies and every movie and every television project. And that is something that is so far from my previous experience and so thrilling. I basically couldn't even find a director at one point when I was looking for a female director. There were so many working on pilots at the time. So it's a really wonderful moment to start your career as a woman director, as a woman executive producer or writer, because there are very few people standing in your way, and if they are, some women will shove them out of the way.
Also, what do you think about Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and the whole group of players that are going to be coming in the rest of this year and early next year? Apple, Walmart, which announced what they're going to be doing in television here in New York on Wednesday, including interactive TV. I want to get plus about interactive in a second. Warner Media, Comcast, NBC Universal, Disney Plus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think they're going to fare, and what is your thoughts about their success possibilities here?
Well, it's clearly a moment of enormous change and enormous opportunity for creators of material. They call it content. I like to call it material. And with studios consolidating the way Disney bought Fox, in general, I'm very much for proliferation of buyers. We want to have as many opportunities for programming the kinds of things we want to make and that we originate writers and producers as possible. So the fact that they exist is thrilling. At this moment, we're at the, I would say, most exhilarating moment of pure opportunity. Now, what we don't know is what's going to happen in terms of an overabundance of content, what happens when some people can't market their shows or get attention for shows when there are so many choices. And that's going to create a standoff, a Mexican hat dance between all of the streamers. And what we hope is that they don't all go to the same posture as the movie studios have gone to, which is familiarity in order to get their signal through the noise. That is to say, they don't all start making Marvel projects.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think is very interesting is that we are seeing a lot of diversity, not only in terms of people of color getting in the door, especially now with long-term production deals with a Netflix, with an ABC, mm-hmm. with a Lionsgate, with a Fremantle, et cetera, mm-hmm. but also the range of projects they are doing. You look at what Shonda Rhimes wants to do, what Octavia Spencer wants to do with her new deal,
right.
what the Obamas want to do with the deal that was announced, what they're doing with Higher Ground, or Regina King, who just got the deal with Netflix. And it seems that, it's opening up more and more doors. But something else is going on, too, which is the interactive television, which has been talked about for decades as programming, as advertising, as a way to order products and services, is finally happening. We have a series on Netflix, an unscripted series that, according to Ted Sarandos, the chief programmer there, has already had 26 million people interact with it. YouTube is going to do something this fall. Walmart is going to do something with their interactive venture Echo, which they've invested a lot of money in with Samsung and MGM and so on. What do you think about you're including a lot, I'm sure, to the world of Hollywood. What is the creative community saying about this idea of interactive TV, where people will be able, either through remote control or through their voice, to choose which paths the show goes, to choose which direction a plot goes?
You know, we were thinking about that 100 years ago when my late great partner Deborah Hill and I made Clue. We tried to figure out ways in which people could come up with their own solutions to the third act. But the technology didn't exist yet. So we were trying to figure out ways where we could put different endings in different theaters because there's something really fun about that idea. But I don't know ultimately if television is a passive or an interactive medium. I think it's a next generational thing. My granddaughters watch YouTube more than they watch network, more than they watch anything. And if there is an interactive show, and I know that FaceTime has one as well, if there's an interactive show that captures their imagination, that technology can take over.
And incidentally, even though it was not showcased last night at the YouTube Brandcast Arena Music Hall, which, by the way, when it was spectacular, incredible production, YouTube has hired somebody to do interactive television, scripted and unscripted, as well as live events, and their first project will go on the air this fall, featuring one of their YouTube content creators.
It's a brand new world out there. Yeah.
It is. It absolutely is. And the fact you have so many people now in it, and you wonder whether these new players like Apple and Disney Plus and so on will get in it, I think it's going to be a fun storyline to see. Lynn, before we leave you, what's next for you? Do you have a TV project lined up? Do you want to go back and film? Where's the future
all
for you?
All of the above. All of the above. I'm putting together some television projects that I'm really excited about. I have a bunch of movies that are getting ready to, are going out to directors. I have Meg Wolitzer's new book, The Female Persuasion, a New York Times bestseller that I'm partnered with Nicole Kidman on. And the writers of This Is Us are writing the script right now. I'm super excited about that because that's a piece about intersectional feminism. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful novel that I was lucky to get.
And by the way,
I'm going
to congratulate Nicole on her new deal with Hulu. For a new series that was announced earlier this week.
Nicole is a very active producer, and her partner, Persari, is terrific. Of course, she was a producer on Big Little Lies.
Yeah, which season two, by the way, comes on in June, and there's the promo.
We can't wait.
Yeah.
We can't wait.
This is a
feature. And my television shows, I don't like to say anything about until they get picked up. It's bad luck.
Is there a network that you'd like? Is there a network you haven't worked with that you'd like to? You've worked with Nat Geo, you've worked with TV Land, you've worked with Sci-Fi, you worked with Amazon. Is there a service you would like to work with, either on a one shot or a more full time basis?
You know, I want to work everywhere. I don't want to belong to anyone because I feel that to each venue, the proper material will flow. So if it's a Nat Geo project, it should go to Nat Geo. If it's an Amazon project, and they have fantastic people at Amazon, I have both television and two movies there, you take it to Amazon. If it's a 20th Century Fox project, you take it to Disney. So there's, or Emma Watts. So there's, I really have always felt that that it's better to pick your buyers for your particular projects. Unless you're Shonda Rhimes, in which case you can do anything, unless you're an 800-pound gorilla, you know, in terms of being able to do anything you want. It gives me more flexibility to be able to pick my venue given the specific project.
Yeah. And one other thing, it's also nice to see that these services are now taking more and more chances on first-timers. We had 2 weeks ago Leah Rochelle, who is the executive producer and creator of Chambers, the new Netflix series starring Uma Thurman and Tony Gold, that premiered last Friday. And I understand it's doing very well so far. And believe it or not, as we mentioned, Leigh at the time, this is her first television series. She never has done television before. And
that's
for Netflix
great.
To take a gamble like that is great. And we're seeing more and more of these services do that. And that's the future of the medium, folks. The Hot Zone, it's in National Geographic's future, and it's one that you ought to see because it deals with a crisis that is still around. Do not pay attention to this one. The Hot Zone, starring Juliana Margulies and Noah Emmerich, it premieres Monday, May 27th, three-night miniseries, 9 p.m. Pacific time on National Geographic. Check the rules where the network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the service online, www.nationalgeographic.com/TV. That's nationalgeographic.com/TV. And for more details about the Echo Health Alliance that Linda will be getting a special award from in 2 weeks here in New York, here is their website, www.ehealthalliance.com. That's www.ehealthalliance.com. You can find out more about both the organization and about the special event coming here in New York in 2 weeks. Linda Hopes, thank you so much for coming on. I've been a big fan of your work for years, and I'm thrilled you got this miniseries off the ground, and I hope it really works in an incredible way, and it really has great impact beyond the presentation.
Thank you so much. I'm touched. I'm very touched. Thank you so very much. This means so much to me.
You're right, Belinda. And keep us posted on TV projects. We'd love to have you back anytime. Open invite.
Well, that's so kind. I'll be here.
You got it. Me too. Take care. Linda Oakes, executive producer of The Hot Zone, joining us live from Los Angeles. More than what we tell about coming your way, but first, the words of the fine folks at audible.com. Have you heard about this new book called Dare to Lead? It's about how we can have more leaders in our society, and it takes a few things to do. But Brett Brown knows how to do it, and you can hear Brett talk about her book, Dare to Lead, with a trial run at audible.com. You know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information inspiration, too. And there's over 100,000 titles to choose from. You know, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. And all you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks, including 2 from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. Have you heard about this? That's original radio productions, one woman, one man shows, Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater from all over the place. And you can get 2 of those titles with your one-month run. So all you got to do is go to audibletrials.com/televised and hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. When we come back, if you like smart TV sets and smart streaming services, they now have a new friend in a new service called Petra TV. You'll meet the former Roku executive who put it all together, Steve Shannon. He joins us live from Los Angeles when we come back after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Be sure to speak at your home for Kings in the Morning. It's the popular talk show with Jay King and crew. Check it out every weekday, Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Best Beat Charge Speaker 24/7 available to you through YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90th edition opening up your May right here on Smart Beat Televised. I'm Matt Bowen with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard, whether you're catching us live on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker or on replay or podcast on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. We're going to get coming away in the hour ahead, so give us a ring. Be part of the program, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a few viewers in the chat room, and we'd love to hear from you. When this guest was on our program several years ago, he was one of the key senior executives at Roku, one of the first TV-connected devices that really made a difference in the era of smart TVs. Now he's trying to do it for services that go through smart TV sets and devices, either as their main way to get distributed to you or the exclusive way, the only way to get distributed to you. The project is called Petra TV. It was formally launched this past Tuesday. And joining us live in Los Angeles is its chief executive officer, Steve Shannon. Steve, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Simon. Been looking forward to it.
Same here. What is Petra TV? What is it out to do?
Yeah, Petra TV is really focused on helping ad-supported services who deliver video to connected TV monetize and, you know, just make the most out of their hard-earned viewership. You know, if you're an advertiser, connected TV advertising is becoming super popular. You know, the TV advertising market is a $70 billion market, and just beginning this transition from the old broadcast style to streaming, you know, through connected devices like your Samsung TV or your Roku or your Apple TV or Amazon Fire TV, all of those types of devices. And in my opinion, it is the most effective form of advertising. So that $70 billion of traditional TV advertising budget will, in my opinion, over the next 10, 15 years, transition entirely 100% over to streaming, which is a massive disruption of the television advertising ecosystem and one that we're kind of here to facilitate and make it as easy as possible for advertisers to take advantage of.
The latest numbers that we have is that last year connected TV advertising was about $8 billion in revenues. The projection for this year is between $13-14 billion and 2020, $20 billion or more. Do you think we're on track for that?
Those numbers sound aggressive and optimistic, but you know what? That's plenty of money for these ad-supported services to participate in and get get themselves funded so that they can spend the money on content, like Linda's content in the earlier episode. It all comes out of that $20 billion. So more the better.
Steve, over the last 18 months, we have had on this program a number of networks that use smart TV sets and devices as either their main way to get distributed to viewers or the exclusive way to get distributed to viewers. How many of those services, like AfroLife.tv or Reverie or PassionFlix or Blueprint or the Fantasy Network, how many of those services are on board with your service? Can you name any? Can you give us any names?
Yeah, we're not giving out names, and I can explain why if you want to know in detail. But the short story is that the publishers have their own ad sales networks, and so they tend to be outselling their channel or their shows. And so when we go out and sell their ads, we don't do that. We sell instead against audiences. So we say, hey, if you want West Coast female, auto intenders, people who are in market for a car, we can do that. But we don't sell against channels or shows. So it's our goal to stay out of those other sales organizations' hair, which is why we don't say, oh, we're on this channel, that channel, and the other channel. But most of our inventory comes from these new virtual pay TV services where you get the full cable lineup and the broadcast channels. As a result of that, we're in virtually every channel. Also, the popular TV Everywhere channels, all the major cable networks have their TV Everywhere apps and things like that. And then the direct-to-consumer ad-supported apps that you mentioned, we're in most of those as well. So we have over 100 channels. So more than likely, if it's something that you know about, we will be selling ads into that network. We've done deals with the majority of the ecosystem. But we unfortunately don't brag about which channels we have or which shows we're putting our ads into to keep peace with their in-house sales orgs.
You're hearing Steve Shannon. He is the former Roku senior executive and now has his own venture at Tetra TV, which launched in public this past Tuesday. And he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So I'm going to have him on with you live from New York. The question or comment for Steve, don't be shy. Make your move and call us 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on Monday, we will have our 10th anniversary of this program being on Blog Talk Radio. And just to unconfuse you, we've been on the air actually for now for 11 and a half years, but our first 2 years we were on NowLive.com, and when that web service went out of business, Blog Talk picked us up, and we have been there ever since. We hope to have the person that kicked off our series on BTR 10 years ago as our guest on Monday. You'll have to stay tuned this weekend on Facebook and Twitter to find out if that's the case. And we have some other possible guests also as well. So be with us Monday at our regular time, 3:50 New Pacific, when we mark 10 years of Tomorrow Will Be Televised right here on Blog Talk Radio. Steve, does the inventory per network fluctuate? In other words, do you get, let's say, 2 minutes an hour on one channel and four on another and so forth? Also, is there a minimum number of either ads, either ad time or spots that the network has to commit to so that you're doing business with them?
Yeah, no, that's a that's a great question because, unlike desktop and mobile digital ad markets where, they're so dominated by Facebook and Google, in streaming television, nobody's dominant. There is no Google or Facebook that dominate the scene. It's very spread out across a lot of, small and medium sized, and there are a couple big ones like, Pluto or Hulu, but generally they're very they're small, and a lot of these companies don't even have their own ad sales organizations because they're too small to go into an advertiser and say, hey, would you like to buy my audience of 20,000 people or 50,000 people? It's just not enough to interest an advertiser. So what we're able to do is step in and say, okay, we're going to pool all this up and make it a critical mass. So right now, if you're an advertiser, you're looking to buy connected TV, there's really only two places you can go buy at scale, and that'd be Roku or Hulu. But the problem is Roku is a platform-specific approach, right? It only goes to the Roku hardware, and Hulu is a single publisher approach. It only goes to the Hulu app. So what about all the other publishers on all the other platforms? How do you buy that? And the answer is Tetra TV. So we give those small guys a way to monetize, whereas before it would be much more difficult.
And I understand that this is involving a wide variety of platforms. It's involving the smart TV set makers. It's also involving Roku, your former workplace, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast. What has been the cooperation level between among the smart TV set makers and the TV device makers?
Yeah, it'll range. If we're cooperating with the hardware maker directly, then we can do better targeting, and so there will be a fair amount of that. Maybe not Roku because they're more aggressive, like we are in the ad domain specifically, but most of the others aren't selling ads directly, so we can partner with them to do technical integrations and data integrations and things like that.
Mm-hmm. What about advertisers? What can you tell us about any advertisers that are early on aboard?
We haven't announced our first client yet. That's we really just announced the existence of the company, and we're in market, rolling all that up right now. What we've done really to date is we've rolled up these publishers that I mentioned, the 100-plus channels, so we have inventory ready to go, and then we've partnered with a bunch of data players across the industry because the thing about TV is we know it's super powerful, right? It is the most powerful type of advertising that there is. But unlike desktop and mobile, you can measure the success, the outcome of the campaign by counting clicks or looking at website traffic, that kind of interactivity. You were talking about Linda in the last episode that TV is not interactive, and it just really isn't interactive. So we know it's super powerful. But how do you measure the impact, like whether you're looking for, store traffic lift or whether you're looking for brand awareness or whether you're looking for website clicks? How do you link the TV campaign back to that action? It's very difficult and requires data science, much more so sort of paradoxically versus mobile and desktop. It's simple, right? You're just interacting. You measure that. In TV, somebody's getting off the couch and doing something, so how do you know? Well, there are a lot of ways to know, a lot of ways to attribute that campaign, but it requires more data science, and it's just super heterogeneous because you've got all these different publishers that are important, and you have all these different hardware platforms that are also important, and there is no answer, there is no measurement or attribution that works cleanly across that entire ecosystem. And that's why this ecosystem is really a lot different than desktop or mobile, because candidly, measurement in connected TV is a little bit of a mess right now. And so you need somebody like Tetra TV to kind of pull it all together and do the data science so that you have some measurement and attribution to understand the result of the campaign.
Since you brought it up, we just wrapped up the Digital Content New Fronts here in New York. And one of the big themes that came out is that maybe, just maybe, we are now in the era of interactive television at last. Interactive programming, interactive advertising, interactive product or service ordering. And we've got Netflix now with an unscripted series that's interactive. It now looks like Walmart is going to get into the business with Echo, either through Vudu, the video on demand service, and maybe or an interactive TV service out of Echo, which is currently an app and a website, with Samsung and MGM and venture capitalists funding it. YouTube, by the way, announced that they're doing at least one interactive service. We have a show this fall. They have a person now who's in charge of interactive programming, both scripted and unscripted, as well as live events. I'm curious to what you're thinking about. Number one, are you going to be selling interactive ads off the bat with Tetra? And secondly, do you think that we are, in fact, really in the era of interactive television? That is, finally, after so many years and decades of starting and stopping and technology not being there, that maybe we finally are there?
Yeah, I think short answer is no. I don't think we're in the age of interactive TV. It's been getting better. You know, every year we pick up, you know, a little bit of growth, and I think that will always be the case for, you know, the rest of our lives. I think TV will be, you know, becoming a little bit more interactive each year, and, you know, maybe in 15, 20 years from now, the majority of people will be interacting with their TVs. But right now, when you run an interactive campaign, the people who actually interact with it are going to be, you know, sub 1%, maybe sub 2% if you're having a great campaign. So the numbers are usually pretty bleak. I mean, we do interactive campaigns, and we'll sell them. Sometimes they make sense, and you know, the beauty of it is that when you do an interactive campaign, as I was talking about earlier, you can measure the outcome, and that's where advertisers want to move. They want to stop paying on a CPM basis, you know, a price per thousand basis, just impression based pricing. They want to move to outcome-based payment, where they have a key performance indicator, they have some kind of goal that they're trying to achieve, and they want to pay because they achieved that goal, not because they bought, you know, X thousands of impressions. So interactive enables that. There are other ways to enable it, but interactive is the best way. So from an advertiser standpoint, it's great. The issue is more the consumers. You know, they don't really want to move. So you know, it'll get a little better each year, but we're a long ways away from critical mass.
Yeah. One factor why there may be some uncertainty about this is that Netflix seems to be all in on interactive. The Bandersnatch, that Black Mirror episode, seemed to change the dime or the paradigm, because they created a technological brand manager that allowed the interactivity to happen, the choose your own adventure to happen. And the second thing is that this first series effort, unscripted, You versus Wild with Greg Willis, that it was interesting on that conference call, the Netflix investor call, Steve, to hear Ted Sarandos himself, the head programmer, say the 26 million people are going to be interacted, will have interacted with it by the end of April.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the show itself has not been well promoted, not publicized, no critical no reviews, no advertising, at least in terms of outdoor advertising or advertising that hits the public. And for 26 million people to interact with that program against that backdrop is really outstanding. And it makes you think, maybe, just maybe, it's finally happening.
I hope so. That'd be great. And I think it's very strategic for Netflix, because their software platform is you know, out in front. And so to the degree it catches on, you know, they'll likely have technical advantages over just about anyone else trying to do the same thing, you know, which could be systemic and differentiating for them over the long run. So, you know, we're rooting for it, no question about it. And there's certainly, you know, times when it's useful. My only point is that it's a niche, and so, you know, I'd hate to see somebody go out and you know, set aside $100 million to go after a giant interactive, you know, production effort, and only to find out that, you know, it didn't really pan out. So I think in 5 years from now, there'll be, you know, it'll be a business. It'll be a real business. Right now, we're just kind of in, you know, experimental mode, and some, you know, some seminal moments like Black Mirror. But you know, that right now it's kind of fits and starts, and we'll see momentum eventually, though, for sure.
Yeah. Although it's not fitting, two things. One, it's not fitting starts in terms of decades, and secondly, you know, where which it has been. I mean, remember in the late 70s we had Cube, we had Full Service Network in the 1990s in Orlando, Florida, which had some interesting video on demand experimental technology at the time. And 26 million people.
Well, you know what? I'm being conventional wisdom right now, and you're being more the visionary guy, and those are the ones who seize the opportunity, or the ones who are thinking ahead. So who knows?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Who knows? I do think, personal thought, that after seeing Walmart's event here in New York on Wednesday, that they really threw the gauntlet down, that they said, basically, we want to be a major programmer. We are going to do whatever it takes. We have the base in terms of our consumers, and we also have the bucks, and we can spend to make interactive television through Echo the best we can be. And we're gonna find out. By the way, Walmart is going to have a shareholder meeting or conference at their Bentonville, Arkansas headquarters next month, where we are expecting to get a huge announcement about where they're going with this whole, what they call a digital entertainment ecosystem. But the fact that Echo is now at the point where they want to get this off the ground, I think is could be a very big tipping point. And that may determine whether the creative community in Hollywood, here in New York, et cetera, decide maybe we ought to think about how we handle this. This may come at us like a speeding bullet or a train a lot faster than we think.
Yeah, that's right. I think I live in L.A., and, there's been belt tightening at the traditional media companies for sure. But, the flip side is with Netflix and Amazon and now Walmart and Apple coming into the market, it just continues to breathe new life into the creative community and sustain them. I think a new wave is coming around long-form free programming. I mean, to date, it's all been about subscription, right? All those ones I just rattled off, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and the rest, those are all subscription programs. What we really haven't seen is long-form, original, ad-supported programming. I mean, a little bit fits and starts again, but I think that's going to be a really exciting area of growth, and we'll start to, we'll start to fund not just the super premium, high-end scripted stuff, but more interesting things, more documentaries, more reality stuff, more, what we think of as TV coming back again, roaring back again through these ad-supported services, Pluto TV that just got acquired by Viacom is a good example. Or the Roku channel and others.
Right. And we also have the Comcast NBC Universal service that is launching early next year. That will be ad-supported.
Yep.
And there's also talk Costco, by the way, and they get into this game. Mark Greenberg, the former head of Epix, has been talking to them about perhaps doing maybe an interactive shopping service, maybe a combo probing shopping service. So we'll have to see. And Target may also, which also showcased themselves with this change of name in their media services department, we'll see if they get into the smart TV world in some degree. Maybe Target doing interactive shopping service or product ordering service of some kind. Also, some people forget too, Steve, that if you have Amazon Fire TV, and 30 million people do according to Amazon's latest quarter that came out a week ago, whether it's an operating system in your television set, a Fire Stick, et cetera, you can order any Amazon product you want. And also on Apple TV, too. And at some point, you wonder with Amazon, given their capabilities, whether they will finally pull the string and say, let's really showcase this, let's really promote this. So we'll see. What kind of collaboration has there been to make this happen? And I'm curious what you think about the fact that you're now running something all your own, as opposed to being part of something like Roku. What's it been like for you to pull this venture together?
Oh, it's fun. When you own what you're doing and you're building something for yourself, it's just a whole different energy that you wake up with in the morning. So the team is jazzed, and we've got a ton of ideas for the future, things that we haven't talked about publicly yet. But it's going to be an exciting ride, we're looking forward to the momentum.
Exactly. How long had you looked at doing your own service, your own venture?
I did start a company, a couple of companies before. This is my fourth startup. And the first one was, it became Dreamweaver. It's Adobe's Dreamweaver product, which is a popular website development tool. And then the next one was Replay TV. I came in a few months after Anthony Wood started it. That was the first DVR. We invented the DVR at Replay TV, and that got sold to DirecTV. And then the third one was Akimbo, which was actually a lot like Roku. It was just too early. We started it in 2003, and Anthony Wood, the CEO of Roku, was smart enough to wait a little longer and have better timing. I did an Akimbo startup that was very similar to Roku, and then ended up rejoining Anthony at Roku ultimately.
One thing for sure, two things for sure, Steve, coming off these digital content new fronts. Actually, three things. One, the interest level in smart TV sets and smart devices is very high. It looks like the companies in the digital space have realized it's not going to be mobile. It's going to be as much smart TV sets and devices, maybe more. Secondly, interactivity looks like maybe is finally about to get off the ground and happen and maybe stay for maybe a lot longer than we think and expand maybe faster than we think. And third, it'll be interesting to see what happens week after next when the broadcast networks and cable networks and people like WarnerMedia, for example, have their upfront events and whether we hear anything about what happened at these new fronts, whether they start to look at things with a view of getting in quick or laying back and see what happens. It's going to be no question about it. This is going to be a fun situation to watch the rest of this year and beyond.
Yeah, it's a very dynamic situation. You know, it's great for consumers with the flexibility and the fact that the ads are becoming more targeted is allowing everyone to reduce the ad loads, and I think that's an interesting dynamic to watch over the next, you know, over the rest of the year is can we start reducing the ad loads, especially in over the top, because, you know, it's more targeted. So you're eliminating the waste, and, you know, can we go from 5 ads in a pod down to 3 ads in a pod, make it so much better for folks, and I hope the industry does that.
Yeah. One final thing before we go. One of the demonstrations that came off at this IAB, Interactive Video Symposium today, was a special effects company who is now getting into putting ads on in a virtual way. For example, while you're watching a scene of a skyline of a city, a billboard of the city may ultimately pop up a T-Mobile logo. Or you see two people at a poolside in a patio, and on the table that they both are leaning their arms on, two bottles of Corona beer. Very interesting situation that these folks are working on. Keep your eye on this. I hope we'll have these folks, by the way, down the road when they're ready to do some more talking. If you want more details about Steve's venture, Tetra TV, here's what you find on the web, www.tetra.tv. That's www.tetra.tv. And I have a hunch that we will be getting back to this venture and what it's up to quite a while. Steve Shannon, the chief executive of Tetra.tv, or Tetra TV, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with this venture. Let's stay in touch and love to have you back on anytime soon.
Many thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a super weekend.
You too.
Steve Shannon from Tetra TV joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our Clapping Trivia Question of the Week. If you know the answer, we've got two books for you as prizes. Gentleman Jack, The Real Lannister, based on the HBO original series on Monday nights, written by Ann Chomka with a foreword by Sally Rainhill, who's on this program in a wonderful interview with us last week. And also, Delta.5 by the terrific writer Daniel Suarez. Here's the question. We're going to pose it one more time before the weekend, and it's this. Name the 1950s television series starring Boris Karloff as a London-based detective. Name the 1950s TV series starring Boris Karloff as a London-based detective. And if you want to find out what it is, go to YouTube because there are episodes of that series, more than one, that are currently playing. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. For a correct answer, you win those two books. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll see if we can try to post it again on the program before we leave you today. If not, first thing tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play in. Nothing to lose, and everything to gain with all the very best. When we come back, you're going to meet two people who put together a pilot that was shown to a lot of folks here in New York this past Monday night at the Tribeca Film Festival. The pilot is called Lady Liberty. The creator is the star, Julia Linden. The director is Taylor Nagel. And they'll both be with us live here at the Big Apple when we come your way after the top of the hour right here. But first, we pause briefly for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com and www.spreaker.com. Together, over 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And we're also coming your way on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. In order to get our podcast, go to iHeartRadio.com, put the Marvy Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in. BTR Spreaker, your home for Move Around with Deborah. It's a new series premiering Thursday, May 16th, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's Move Around with Deborah, Thursday, May 16th, the premiere episode, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific only on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And again, that's BTR coming your way 24/7, anytime you like, at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Televise, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard. 56 degrees, by the way, at the top of the hour. Simon Appelbaum with you live from New York. Our first episode of May 2019 here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And to those of you kicking us in on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, we welcome you as well. We got two wonderful guests coming your way in the half hour ahead. So be part of the action. Interact with us at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Summer's good anyway, you're catching us across the country around the globe here on BTR and Spreaker. And don't forget our chat room. It's in business for you, and you can put your question or comment in that way. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Three people already in the room, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. This past Monday night, five makers of potential TV series had their products presented in one location, the Tribeca Film Festival's annual pilot season. And today, we've got the people behind one of those pilots with you. It's called Lady Liberty. It's a coming-of-age program in more ways than one. And joining us live here in the Big Apple are the two people who made it happen. They are both executive producers. First, the creator and the star, Julia Linden. Hello, Julia.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. And joining both of us, the director, also executive producer, Taylor Nagel. Taylor, good to have you with us.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you.
First of all, Julia, what's been the reaction from folks ever since the pilot was shown Monday night?
It's been great. The energy in the room was fantastic. And then the past couple of days of being around the festival, people have been loving it and saying they want to see more. So I'm feeling good so far.
And what kind of reaction are you getting, Taylor? What are people saying specifically about what they like or what they have to offer in terms of feedback?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I think what's been so exciting is how much people connect with Julia's character, Shay. You know, she has this very expressive face, and I think people feel compelled by that and feel like they want to see more of her story. So that's great.
And by the way, she knows where she speaks. I had a chance before we went on the air to see the website connected with this pilot. And, Julie, you do have quite an expressive, not only face, but outlook on life.
Thanks. I'm making a bunch of faces right now, but you can't see.
Well, we can imagine. This is radio, so we can do the imagination ourselves. Julia, is this your first attempt to do a television series of your own? And if so, how did it happen?
Yes, this is definitely the first attempt. I had the idea about 3 years ago to write a script for a show that was mainly based on my own experiences with coming out in the city and finding a spot in the queer community. And I wanted it to be funny and to make sure that it was grounded. And so I worked on a script, and then I got connected with Taylor, who is an awesome director who had worked on a lot of different documentaries beforehand. And we teamed up and kept working on the script for quite a while and ultimately decided we were ready to shoot the pilot. And we did it totally ourselves, the team of other awesome women. And we shot it this summer in New York for about 6 days. And then we submitted it for Tribeca for their TV pilot program. And we just screened last week. So it's been a wild year.
As Julia knows, and Taylor, you have engaged yourself in documentary work. What made you decide this was the project to get out of your documentary comfort zone and try something different if this is your first time ever doing a TV pilot?
Yeah, it's my first narrative project entirely. And I think it was sort of a natural transition because it is based on Julia's life. And so we spent almost a year and a half developing the script together. You know, it's Julia's words, her experience. But it was something that I got to know very well. And I think there was sort of a comfort in taking somebody's lived experience and transitioning that into a story we see on screen.
And how much of that character is you? How far were you willing to take your life and put it in that character?
Yeah, so we like to say that Shay is a younger version of Julia. So she's way more she's just very new to everything. So I got to really channel that, the, you know, being in New York, kind of being overwhelmed, not really having your people, trying to make it as a comedian and find her voice, trying to make friends in a world where she didn't really feel comfortable, you know, being in those kinds of spaces, specifically like gay bars and those kinds of things. So those are all, you know, feelings that I've felt over the years. And luckily I'm, you know, a lot more confident now than I was back then. So I just channeled all that insecurity and put it into this character.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, too, as a director, it takes a lot of, it's a brave thing to do that Julia did, to kind of access that younger version of herself and be so raw and be so open about that time in her life.
Mm-hmm. In terms of putting this character together, and both of you working, and tell us how we do about working on the script, what kind of themes did you want to see? Because that was a pilot of a TV series. What kinds of themes did you want to set up that could, if it became a series, become ongoing storylines?
Yeah, I mean, I think the show will explore sort of Shay's parallel journeys, both in terms of figuring out her own sexuality, figuring out how she fits into the queer community in New York, but also her journey as a comedian. You know, she's an assistant to an A-list comic, and she's also trying to figure out her own place in that world. So those are sort of two parallel and occasionally intersecting things that we'll explore in the show, hopefully.
By the way, someone just entered our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment, don't be shy. Any question is good. So ring it in, 646-652-296, or put it in the chat room. The sooner you do, the sooner we'll address it. Simple as that. Julia, how easy was it, or hard was it, once the script was finished, to get people to collaborate with you, either production crew or fellow actors?
Yeah, I was, because this was, you know, the first pilot that I hadn't ever done, and Taylor and I took on a producing role, I was very pleasantly surprised that people were eager to say yes and get on board. We had great attachments from the cast and kind of all the people that we imagined and you know, dreamed up while working on the script, who we wanted to play the roles, ultimately said yes, so we were really happy with that. And then in terms of the crew, we had great luck. We shot in New York, and through my connections kind of from the comedy world and Taylor's in the documentary world, we put together a crew of a lot of young people, mostly women, who some had worked together, some had not, but it really made for a really positive vibe on set.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, we see a lot of TV shows now being shot in documentary style, sort of the you are there kind of dealing. Was that sort of the natural way to go for this pilot, or did you want to try to experiment with a different kind of storytelling style?
I think we wanted to keep a sense of authenticity, right? Like, we wanted to New York to feel like the New York that we know. And the DP, Sarah Kinney, and I had actually worked on a documentary project together, so we shared that sensibility. And I think that was very useful going into the shoot, because we knew sort of the energy we were looking for. I think, and I hope that comes across. Yeah.
So, Julia, talk about the plot of this pilot. What kind of things do your character go through, as well as the people around her?
Sure. So when we first meet Shay, she actually is in her gynecologist's office and kind of a routine checkup, and she accidentally comes out to her, and it's the first adult that she's come out to. And she kind of has this reckoning with the gynecologist, who's a stranger, but also kind of a family friend of, wow, if this is the first person who she's kind of, you know, being real to, then she probably has a lot of work to do and a lot of people that she needs to, you know, start talking to and being her real self around. So we kind of meet her in that world, and then, she goes through her day, and, an old flame ends up breaking up with her. So we see some heartbreak for Shay, who ends up in a pretty low spot. But ultimately, things really turn around when she meets a new person. This, like, very cool, queer girl just randomly in the back of an Uber. And things turn around, and it kind of gives Shay that chance to finally, you know, take that plunge and make friends and be part of the queer community. So that's what's happening in terms of her sexuality journey, but a whole other, you know, sort of scenes are happening that help progress the plot in terms of her comedy career. And we see her throughout practicing her stand-up routine for like an indie showcase that she's going to be in that night. But throughout the day, things get interrupted by her celebrity boss, who's a stand-up comedian, you know, needing things from her. And then he also has a big show that night. So we get to really see his success compared to, you know, what her version of success is as well.
Tara, that last point about being a stand-up comedian, or sort of scenes of the marvelous Mrs. Maisel sort of dance in your head. Was that series inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, when we first developed the series and we're talking about it, the show wasn't out yet. But once I saw that, it quickly became one of my new favorite shows. I love it very much. The theme, especially in Maisel, of like her having a hidden life that she's keeping from her very nosy Jewish family, I related to that a lot. It's a little bit like my family. I also have a nice, lovely, nosy Jewish family, and they, you know, are well aware of Shay's desire to, you know, be a comedian, but they don't know about her hidden life or her desire to, you know, find her place in the queer community. So that theme is in our show too.
You're hearing Julia Linton and Tamara Nagel. They are the creator, star, and director, respectively, of Lady Liberty. It was on the 5 pilot season pilots that were showcased this past Monday night at the Tribeca Film Festival. Simon Appelbaum with you live from New York here on Suave Televised. Glad to have you and Julia and Taylor aboard. And if you have a question or comment for them, be involved. Get interactive with all of us at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. When we prepare Suave Televised, among our guests will be Eric Bromberg. He is the president of Dust. It's the programming service from Gunpowder and Sky, which is making smart folks in film and in television. And in the case of Dust, it's a very unique programming service that features the world. It's really a genre programming service, and it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we'll also meet a pair that did a short film that was presented at Tribeca called Zero. Could it become a television series? Well, ask David and Keith Lynch. What if they relate to David Lynch in some way? You know, the Twin Peaks creator and Blue Velvet, et cetera. You never know. And let's round brother David and Keith Lynch all with us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Suave Televised. And coming up the following Friday, among our guests, we'll have someone we've had on this program very much before, a major champion of diversity from when she was the head of marketing at Oxygen on Up. She's now the chief culture officer for Civic Entertainment Group. Our good friend Linda Ahn will join us. That's all coming up next Friday, following Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Be with us as Suave Televised kicks off its 11th year on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, starting on Monday. Julia, where did you produce the show in New York? What location did you use?
So the West Village was their home base for sure. That's where I lived for, you know, the first 5 years in the city, so we wanted to shoot as many locations that were, you know, the real locations where things happened. We also shot at Caroline's on Broadway, the big stand-up club in Times Square, and that was because I had actually interned there as my first job in comedy while I was still in college, which was a cool, trippy experience. And then we shot a bit out in Brooklyn, as well as Long Island City at Creek in the Cave, which is a well-known stand-up venue as well.
Yeah, we got really lucky. A lot of places were generous to let us film there.
And speaking of generosity, Taylor, did you get any help from the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment or from places in the areas that you went to? What kind of cooperation did you get from the locals?
Yeah, so actually, Julie and I in this project, we are recipients of the Women's Fund from the Mayor's Office. I think it's the first annual program that they're doing, and they awarded grants to, a lot of projects this year, and we were one of them, which is great because that helped us sort of keep this project going.
Oh, incidentally, congratulations to Ada Castillo, who is the new head of the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, succeeding Julie Mann, who did a wonderful job the last couple of years and was on our program, by the way, during her tenure there. And hopefully we can do that with Annie down the road because a lot of people like what she has done. She's been one of those people behind the scenes in the mayor's office for a number of years, and now we'll see what she decides to do and how she decides to expand the mayor's office program. Now, Julia, how did this go from being a produced pilot to getting into Tribeca?
Yeah, we were very interested in taking it to film festivals. And, you know, part of us had, you know, we always saw it as a pilot and hoped that we could screen it as such. But obviously so many of the festivals just have shorts programs. But we were lucky enough to actually, you know, see that Tribeca this year was including the pilot program as part of the full film festival in April. So we made sure to submit to that, and we were jazzed when we got in.
Yeah, and we should point out that Tribeca has a separate TV festival that will be going in the third year later this year that will also be featuring pilots as well as tributes to current and future television series. Taylor, we are now seeing a lot of TV shows that are presenting more accurate portrayals of the gay community, the lesbian community, transgender, bisexual, so on and so forth, on all sorts of levels. In putting the script together with Julia, were there certain things about the gay-lesbian experience that you wanted to bring out, let's say, that hadn't been brought out, even the day where we seem to have a more flexible way of seeing more accurate portrayals?
Yeah, I mean, this is Julia's own experience, and I think it's always important to add sort of more representation and more versions of these stories to the mix. And I'm going to let Julia speak to that because it is her life.
I just thought it was really important to start, you know, in what we were going to show, start from the beginning to really show Shay in that beginning state of anxiety where she knows that she's gay but hasn't figured out how to integrate it into her life yet. So just starting with a really human place. And having the audience really understand this character and get this character and get her struggle and want her to be able to kind of come into her own and have the people that we, you know, meet in the pilot embrace her eventually.
For both of you, of the four other pilots, were you impressed equally with all four, or was there one pilot or two pilots that you, like, wow, this is like a new trailblazer for television. Wow, this is a new direction. Now the filmmaking is, or the tape making is pretty spectacular.
I mean, honestly, I felt like it was such an incredibly strong category. I think they are sort of different tones, but I was so surprised at how much, like, how incredible they all were. You know, I mean, they had a Project Youth Noir from George Pelicanos, and then there's Awoken from Daryl Ween, and it was just, it was great. And the two HBO Access projects were also incredible. Unimundo and Halfway, and they were both incredible. No, it's nice to be in a room full of talented creators.
Mm-hmm. So, Julia, what is the next step here? Are you starting to get nibbles from programming services, or are you going to sort of scout the landscape and think, with both you and Taylor, this is the network I want to go and take this pilot to?
Yeah, so we've gotten some awesome responses in the past couple of days since we have screened, and we're excited to kind of continue with those and keep meeting people because it feels like the response has been really positive. But our, you know, our goal here is to turn it into a full-blown series and find the right home for it.
In our first half hour, we had Linda Obst on, who has had an amazing career in both film and television. And I'll pop the question to both of you that I asked her, which is, what do you think of today's landscape of television, where you have all sorts of services, cable broadcast, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle, CBS All Access, and on the way, Apple, Walmart, Disney Plus, Warner Media, Comcast, and Universal, services available on smart TV sets and smart devices for the most part. What do you think of the landscape of TV these days?
I mean, I think the long list of outlets you just shared kind of says it all, right? There's so many places where content is being shared, and I think that's exciting. It's a great space to be in right now, I think.
Yeah, especially, you know, we have such a clear vision of what we want this series to be. So finding a spot that, you know, that shares our excitement and, you know, would help us to kind of make it the most authentic version would be fantastic. And it's good to know there's so many different spots out there. So, you know, it helps the creators.
Do either of you or both of you have role models, like people you aspire to in terms of leaders in television that you aspire to that serve as role models for you?
I was lucky to work at a company full of very talented veteran producers when I first started in the film world. And so I am glad to have them remain mentors in my career as I navigate this sort of new television space. So, yeah, I guess those are my roles as the cool ladies I got to work with.
Yeah, I would say that especially just as a consumer of TV and as a person in comedy who always wanted to, you know, really solidify and put out whatever my story, my voice was, I looked at people like Lena Dunham and Issa Rae who were able to really, you know, create shows and create opportunities for other people and themselves through through shows that kind of center around them and always wanted to do something like that. So this is my attempt at that right now. So I look to them as role models for sure.
Yeah. One of the things that we are seeing, and it really started over a year or two ago, and it started with Netflix with that major deal with Shonda Rhimes, is now that we're seeing both major talents in television as well as newcomers or first time people who prove themselves on one show getting these long-term production deals with a Netflix, a Hulu, an Amazon, a CBS All Access, a Fremantle, a Sony Entertainment, Warner Bros., et cetera, et cetera. And what do you think about that? Would you like to have an arrangement where you produce exclusively for one company, one production company, one television network, one smart TV service?
If the people behind it were great and there's a relationship, then that seems like a great way to make content.
Taylor, same question for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the opportunity came to us, that would be a hard thing to turn down, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So before we go, Julia, let's say you become a series, and no matter what the network is or service is, you become a series. Have you already started to think about how you want to take your character from that opening episode? What kind of situations, what do you want to explore?
I'll jump in here, but I think the pilot ends on a question. You know, there's a real what's next for Shay. So we'll start to explore sort of both her trajectory in her professional life, you know, working for this A-list comedian, also trying to figure out her own voice as a comic, as a stand-up. And then we'll also start to look at her, you know, sexual relationship to her identity. Both, you know, romantic relationships as well as friends and finding a community.
Yeah, and so we're pretty excited about, you know, the places we want to take it. I think there's a lot of comedy in there, but also, you know, obviously a lot of growth that can happen for this character. And there's some really fun stuff that we've cooked up already in terms of, you know, her stand-up and bits that are going to happen that kind of out herself on stage and, you know, trying to be confident in the queer community and find her place even when she's, you know, actually in real life not and is really just stumbling through it and the ways that, you know, it's fine but also potentially, like, hurts people because she's not as evolved as maybe she needs to be. So we get to watch her evolve and become a better, you know, person in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's a story about growing up and figuring out, you know, one's identity in a that sort of messy 20-something time in everyone's life.
Mm-hmm. Are there any plans to go to other TV festivals, Series Fest in Denver, New York Television Festival here, Sarah Bowl, which will be in Williamsburg this year in Brooklyn, ITV, well, now it's called Catalyst, which is going to be in Duluth, Minnesota for the first time, you know, other TV festivals around the country?
We certainly hope so. We'll be screening in the Berkshire Film Festival later this month, as well as Inside Out Toronto. But we hope to be a part of some of the more television-focused festivals, too.
If you want to know more about Lady Liberty, here's where you can go online. They do have a website. It's www.ladylibertytv.com. It's www.ladylibertytv.com. And don't forget, the Rebecca Film Festival continues and wraps up this weekend. Still tickets available for many of their attractions, including some of their TV attractions as well. And all you got to do is go to Rebecca's website
and find out how you can get tickets. Tribeca Film Festival is sponsored in part by American Express, I believe, and AT&T also. And it's been a pleasure, by the way, to cover some of the TV events over the last 2 weeks. Congratulations to everybody at the Tribeca Film Festival for what they've been doing, including their marvelous PR team over at Sprint Studios, right across the street from where the Holland Tunnel has its Manhattan exit. Julia Linden, Taylor Nagel, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on becoming one of the pilot season entries this year, and hopefully maybe down the road you get a TV series. If you do, we would love to have you back.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Julia Taylor. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Julia Linden and Taylor Nagel joining us live here in New York. Incidentally, on Monday, we were scheduled to have another one of the pilot makers, actually responsible for two of the pilots that were showcased on Monday, Halfway and Unimundo 45. It's Kimberly Browning. We are still waiting to hear back from her. We hope to have her rescheduled sometime down the road. And also, another one of the pilot makers this year was George Polikonos, the famed writer-producer with David Simon of The Wire, Treme, and DC, and The Deuce, which is wrapping up the third and final season, be showing later this year on HBO. His pilot is called DC Noir. It's an interesting anthology series, and it's been several episodes have been made. We are trying to get George on the program, and we may get him as part of our first ever weekend edition. That's right, a special weekend edition. We're waiting for that, and hopefully next week we can tell you about that. By the way, it's directed by the person who plays Tom Robinson in the critically acclaimed, now Tony-nominated production of To Kill a Mockingbird here in New York. And we hope to have that person on either in a week or two or on this special weekend edition. So keep posted for that. Finally, before we leave you today, an appreciation. We started the week with the news note that John Singleton, at that hour, was on life support. A few hours after our program, he passed away at the age of 51. It's fair to say that there are many people of color and women of color in television that are able to be in the medium because John Singleton opened a door for them, whether it was through his films like Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, and a beautiful movie that more people should see called Rosewood, to his work as a director on Empire, and more recently, his creation and directing of the FX series Snowfall, which will have its third season this summer on FX. And by the way, he was able to get a few episodes in before his stroke, which led to, unfortunately, to his passing this past Monday afternoon. John Singleton was somebody who got fame, and even in the downtimes of his career, was able to keep going and inspire many, many people to get into the medium of film and ultimately the medium of television. He was someone with a profound nature and a fun nature, too. And not only did he do great important movies like Boys in the Hood and Poetic Justice and Rosewood, but he also did some fun films too, like the Fast and Furious movie, Too Fast, Too Furious, which he will also become known for. He could be a director for all seasons. It's a shame that he passed away way too early in his career, but I have a hunch that given some of the developments that happened this week, with Octavia Spencer getting her own production company and her own long-term production deal, and Regina King getting her long-term deal producing series and movies for Netflix, I think he would have liked it. I think he would have really appreciated the fact that, yeah, we are getting more diverse. We are getting more women of color and people of color in this medium, and that is a great thing. John Singleton, a very special person in the world of diversity in television and film, and his presence will be very much missed. But his legacy will be everybody who currently is making it in television and those who will be there in his and their footsteps. We're back on Monday with our 10th anniversary episode. Join us, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker and on iHeartRadio. The views expressed in this program are solely those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, and he told us Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sommer, executive content producer, and the co-founders, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Bobby Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. 3 free audio books and a 1 month trial. audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Cinco de Mayo weekend. We are back on Monday to celebrate 10 years on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Be with us. Whatever you're up to this weekend, please make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.